This delay is just...
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Ruff Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Ruff Melville.
Well, on the earth.
Good day, workers, toadheads, non-toke lovers of liberty. I'm Radical Russ Belville coming to you live from Denver, Colorado. That's right, we're in the first legal state, and we are bringing you a jam-packed episode of the Russ Belville Show today. Working on this on the remote, so I hope you're hearing me okay. Give me a thumbs up in the chat room if you are, but so far so good. We are actually in Lakewood, Colorado, just outside of Denver. We had a great day today. I'm hanging out here with Wiz Kaliko. Say hi, Kaliko.
Aloha.
No, the joke is hi, Kaliko.
Oh.
Say hi, Kaliko.
Hi, Kaliko.
There you go. See, we're too sober here. That's the problem. But that's going to end really quickly because we are in Denver, Colorado, and I've got some fantastic concentrates here that we've gotten a hold of. Going to have a really good time checking all of that out. We went out earlier today to Denver Relief, which is one of the leading dispensaries out here, and one of the politically minded dispensaries at that, headed up by Kayvon Kalatbari. Kayvon is running for the Denver City Council, one of the at-large seats. So Kaliko and I stopped by and had a conversation with him not more than an hour or two ago. So we'll bring you that interview coming up at 45 past the hour with Kayvon Kalatbari. Talk to him a little bit about running for City Council and everything else that's going on. Also, we've got our regular Dr. Mitch. We got our regular segment with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Sorry, so much going on here. And we'll be taking your calls live at 84420 Radio if you've got any questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We'll also watch our chat room, which you can get into through our page at 420radio.org. You can log on with Facebook or Ustream and get into that chat room and ask your questions that way as well. Today in the Drug War Data Mines, we're going to take you back a couple days ago when Kaliko and I made our way south from Wyoming to get here to Denver. We stopped in Fort Collins, Colorado at the Infinite Wellness Center, and we learned a whole lot about how they are running legal recreational marijuana here in Colorado. Specifically, we got a little bit of sticker shock. We're a little bit spoiled in Portland, Oregon, so for the Drug War Data Mining, we're going to take a look at how much does a couple days worth of weed cost Radical Russ in Fort Collins, Colorado? That's coming up in Drug War Data Mining. Also on the show today, in Behind the Headlines, we are going to take a look at California. All eyes are on California 2016 as far as marijuana legalization goes. We are desperately trying to make sure that happens because it will just be the game changer, not just for America, but for the entire world. And of course, our opponents, Project Sam, Sheldon Adelson, some of these Save Our Society from Drugs people, they also know that California is the big picture. So we're going to take a look at the Behind the Headlines and see what's going on in California. But first, we'll start off with the 420 Radio news. And in the headlines today, we got some bad news about Oregon's M Bank, one of the banks that was giving some checking services to credit services as well to the cannabis industry. New Mexico's Governor Susana Martinez has vetoed an industrial hemp bill just as Virginia has signed one and is moving forward with industrial hemp. A Wisconsin lawmaker wants to legalize marijuana. We'll tell you about that. And a dispensary in Egg Harbor Township, New Jersey, is having trouble defending itself in a lawsuit. We'll tell you why. Also, when will Oregon finally have legal edibles for you to be able to buy in a pot shop? It's going to be a lot longer than anyone expected. All that's coming up on the Russ Belville Show, live from Denver, Colorado. Stick around. We're right back after this.
To the Russ Belville Show. the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org.
Are you tired of storing your herb in back alley baggies? Then keep your herb fresh and protected with Pottles. Pottles are airtight and odor-free, not to mention they're reusable, BPA-free, and UV-resistant. Pottles come in a variety of sizes, styles, and colors, so go check out Pottles at mypottles.com. Use the code STASH to get an additional 10% off. Again, that's mypottles.com, mypottles.com, and tell them Radical Russ sent ya.
My goodness. Hey, this is Big Daddy,
I like it.
I want you cats to join me at the Funky Roller Ring, right here on 420 Radio. It's like the groove in Soul Town, smashed together with a greasy pork sandwich on the side, baby.
Two hot dogs and a strawberry soda.
Funky Roller Ring.
Support for 420 Radio comes from Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies, a guide to gardening with nature, authored by Kip Zonderkopf. Based on the ethos that a living soil is the foundation of a thriving garden, Kick-Ass Cannabis and Veggies is your guide to naturally growing resinous buds and nutrient-rich veggies. Get the ebook now with instant download at kickassorganics.com. Previews available on Amazon, iTunes, Nook, Google Play, Kobo, and many other online retailers.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, April 13th, 2015. MBank, the small Oregon-based financial institution that has serviced the cannabis industry since last year, told Marijuana Business Daily that it will close all of its accounts with marijuana companies in the next 2 months. Jeff Baker, the CEO and president of MBank, said the cost and time spent on compliance is too much for the Gresham, Oregon-based community bank to handle. The company, which quickly became one of the largest banks serving the marijuana industry, has about 70 to 75 accounts with cannabis businesses, Baker said. Most of them are in Oregon, though a few are in Washington state. Baker said, quote, "We just do not have the resources to manage the compliance necessary to service the cannabis industry. This is not what we want to do. This is what we have to do. We got into this business to serve an underserved group, and I wish we still could do that." New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez has vetoed Senate Bill 94, which would have legalized the research of the hemp plant and, when allowed by federal law, would enable New Mexico's Department of Agriculture to license hemp cultivation and processing. Also known as the Industrial Hemp Farming Act, SB 94 would have provided the statutory framework to permit the growing of hemp, naming the state's Department of Agriculture as the agency responsible for regulation, and gave the department the authority to promulgate hemp cultivation licensing rules when federal laws change. Senate Bill 94 was supported by strong supermajorities of legislators in both the House, 54 to 12, and the Senate, 33 to 8. Support was strong and diverse, crossing political lines, trades, and entire industries. Emily Kaltenbach, New Mexico State Director with the Drug Policy Alliance, said, quote, "The governor missed an important opportunity to support New Mexico's farmers and small business owners." Virginia will soon legalize the growing of industrial hemp under legislation passed by the General Assembly and signed into law by Governor Terry McAuliffe. Licensed growers will be allowed to cultivate industrial hemp as part of a university-managed research program. Once the law takes effect in July, the Virginia Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services will develop regulations for growing hemp. A Wisconsin lawmaker says the state should legalize marijuana to reduce crime and improve the state's economy. Representative Melissa Sargent, a Madison Democrat, introduced a bill Monday that would legalize marijuana for medicinal and recreational purposes. In a news conference Monday, Sargent said that legalizing the drug would reduce crime associated with growing and selling cannabis and create jobs. But the bill will likely go up in smoke. Republicans control both chambers and don't seem eager to support the measure. Governor Scott Walker last spring signed into law a measure that permits the use of marijuana derivatives to treat certain medical disorders. His spokeswoman didn't immediately respond to an email seeking comment on Sargent's bill. The co-founder of the medical marijuana dispensary in Egg Harbor Township, New Jersey, will appear in court Wednesday to dispute claims he blocked his employees' attempts to join a union in a case that is being watched across the nation. And this isn't even David Knowlton's biggest problem. Knowlton, board chairman of the nonprofit Compassion Care Foundation Dispensary, is not a lawyer, and he can't find one to represent him before the National Labor Relations Board. State law created a medicinal marijuana program, but to the federal government, growing and possessing marijuana remain illegal activities. Rules of professional conduct say attorneys cannot advise or assist their clients engaged in, quote, conduct a lawyer knows is criminal or fraudulent, end quote. Law firm of Ballard Spahr of Philadelphia offered to represent the financially struggling dispensary for free, but later withdrew the offer out of concern its attorneys could face ethics charges and put their licenses at risk, Knowlton said. Oregon's regulated medical marijuana dispensary industry is... Oregon's regulated recreational marijuana industry is expected to roll out sometime next year, but you may not see cannabis-infused edibles for sale until 2017. Citing the complexity of regulating edibles, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission this month asked the Oregon legislature for authority to delay the licensing of edible manufacturers. Lawmakers have not taken action on the Liquor Commission's request. The agency asked the Oregon Health Authority to convene a panel of public health and medical experts to examine the issue of serving sizes for the recreational market. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, April 13th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome!
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal. Ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And today we're taking a look at the great state of California. Bloomberg Politics is as well, and they've posted an essay, Marijuana Legalization Across the U.S. May Hinge on the 2016 California Vote. And I completely agree with this. I've been saying for a long time that these first couple of rounds of states are the momentum. We've gotten Colorado and Washington in one election. We got Oregon and Alaska in another election. That's the momentum we need to build up for the third time is the charm, California. The California market is absolutely huge. It would dwarf all of the combined marijuana market so far. That is, if you took Colorado, Washington, Alaska, and Oregon and doubled that, you'd get 39 million California residents, right? So it is the big prize. And as a student of history, I've often pointed out that these sort of social movements, there's a kind of a pendulum effect to them. They'll move out and grant some more rights. They'll recognize more liberty. And then there's a swing back. There's kind of a point where some people feel it's gone too far and the pendulum swings back. And that's what we've got to guard against as we move forward with California in 2016, is that pendulum swinging back. It's part of the reason I'm defending Responsible Ohio in 2015, because we just can't have any backwards movement until we get California legalized. Once California is legalized, I think the pendulum can't swing back far enough to cause any real serious damage. But our opponents recognize this as well. Kevin Sabet from Smart Approaches to Marijuana says, quote, "A state with so much influence and size is very important. We expect a long, drawn-out battle in California and an expensive one," end quote. And California is not a slam dunk, folks. I know a lot of people outside of the West think of California as hippy-dippy liberal land with a pot shop on every corner, and that's just not the case. Outside of the major urban areas, outside of the Bay Area, most of California is anti-pot. You can't even grow your own medical pot indoors in Fresno County or in Fresno, California. And there's a lot of other places that have bans and moratoriums. There is a strong anti-pot sentiment that only needs a little push to get some real traction. Now, looking forward to that push, right now, the current poll, Public Policy Institute of California, came up with a poll just recently that shows 55% in favor of legalization, 43% who want it to remain illegal, and presumably 2% who are still undecided on the measure. So this has to happen, and 55 is not a big lead to be going into it with. We are hoping that there's some big money that is going to back this California initiative. People like George Soros, George Zimmer, the estate of Peter Lewis, and so forth. The folks at the Drug Policy Alliance have been working hard to try to raise money. They're aiming at raising $20 million to start with, $15 to $20 million from the Drug Policy Alliance. The initiative needs 365,000 signatures if it's statutory. It'll need 585,000 signatures if it's a constitutional amendment. Meanwhile, on the other side, Sheldon Adelson is the person that people are looking at. I imagine that Project Sam is already scheduling meetings with Sheldon Adelson. He's the billionaire chairman of the Las Vegas Sands Corporation. They're the world's largest casino operator. And he put $5.5 million into the Florida medical marijuana ballot measure in opposition. And I can tell you that his $5.5 million is what prevented Florida from having medical marijuana. That would have passed. It already got 58%. It would have gotten over 60 if not for the hateful, misleading, scaremongering ads that Sheldon Adelson was able to bankroll down there in Florida. So the political folks that are paying attention to this, Michael Vachon, Wayne Johnson is the fellow's name. He's in a Sacramento-based firm, the Wayne Johnson Consultants, who says that if the opponents of legal marijuana can raise just $10 million, that would set them up for a strong position to be able to defeat legalization in California in 2016. That is, if they only raise half as much as our side is trying to raise, he believes that this could cause legalization to fail in 2016. He points out that any opposition is going to emphasize the impact that the availability of marijuana will have on children to try to sway the votes of parents. And according to Johnson, quote, They're the first voters who will switch sides. It's a key demographic that represents the Achilles heel of the yes side. So it's incumbent on us in the legal states to make sure parents understand that drug dealers don't check ID.
Oh, 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 oh!
Hey, Coleco, it's 420. Happy 420, everybody. It's actually 420 where we're at because we're in Denver, Colorado. We got to fire up the torch. There we go. Torch is fired up. Dab's on their way. Happy 420. We're back with the high cost of a Rocky Mountain high right after this.
Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio.
Are you in the market for portable vaporizers now? Get online to vapes.buzz, the quick and easy link to portablevaporizersnow.com. Vapes.buzz has everything you are looking for, including vape pens, herbal vaporizers, e-juice, parts, accessories, and more. Visit vapes.buzz and use promo code 420radio to get 10% off your online purchase, or just give them a call at 866-264-2415. Vapes.buzz. Get vaping, baby!
Funky Roller Ring.
This is Big Daddy, and I want you to join me every Thursday night for some good old soul, funk, and disco at the Funky Roller Ring on 420 Radio. You dig?
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. Almost 23 after the hour, and today a little real-world drug war data mining. As you know, Coleco and I are here in Denver. We're here a week early for the Cannabis Cup, meeting up with some of the movers and shakers out here. And stay tuned. We've got our interview with Kayvon Kalatbare coming up at the end of the hour from Denver Relief. There's also a couple of other trade shows going on here the week leading up to 420. So we're out here gathering all sorts of great content for you. But on our way across this great land of ours, we, of course, had to go cold turkey across two great red states, the states of Idaho and Wyoming. Now, interesting trivia, Idaho and Wyoming are two of the three states, New Jersey's the other one, that have laws against merely being high. You don't even have to possess marijuana or paraphernalia. If you're under the influence of marijuana, it is a misdemeanor in those two states. So we traveled across those states completely dry, made our way across Idaho and Wyoming, and as we headed south from Laramie to make our way to Denver, of course, we wanted to hit up the first pot shop we could find. A quick look at weed maps, and we were able to find that the first pot shop is the Infinite Wellness Center, which you find going south through Fort Collins, Colorado. Now, as we approached the Infinite Wellness Center, first thing I noticed is it had a big old sign, and below the sign, in big letters, in red letters, it said REC, and in green letters, it said MED. I later learned that's because some places are medical only, some places are recreational only, some are both REC and MED. So I was very happy that our kind were allowed at this particular pot shop. Second thing I noticed is just how busy it was. people coming in and out and in and out in a very big parking lot with very steady stream of customers. So as we got inside, I also we noticed, first of all, that the room, first they had to take your ID. And when they took your ID, they gave you this piece of paper with your name written on it and the fact that we were from Oregon, because we're only allowed to buy 7 grams because we're out of staters. In-staters can buy the whole ounce. So we got inside, and the place was segregated by one of those belt lines like you'd find at the line at an airport or a bank. And on one side, it was medical, and it was cordoned off about 25% of the shop. And the other side was recreational, and it cordoned off about 75% of the shop. But looking in the display cabinets, it looked like everything for sale was exactly the same. Jars of weed, concentrates, edibles, all for sale on both sides, except for one difference. On the medical side, there was a display cabinet full of pipes and bongs with a sign on it that said, "Medical glass only." I don't know what it is about the pipe that makes it a medical pipe. Maybe they bore the carb hole a little differently so arthritics can use it better. I don't know. What happens if you smoke recreational weed out of a medical pipe? Is it like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters? Does something terrible happen? Anyway, we got through and we made our purchase. And as you know, I'm into vapor pens. I love the vapor pen cartridges. And I asked what sort of sativa vapor pen cartridge he had, and he pointed one out. And I got that. And then I asked for a couple of joints. And I said, "What kind of joints do you have?" Expecting there might be some different kinds. But no, the pre-roll joints were just what they called rainbow joints. In Portland, we call them salad joints. It's just the trim from everything left over rolled into a joint. Those joints cost $10 a piece, and the cartridge cost $65. And when I complained that $65 was a lot for a 1 gram cartridge, he informed me, "No, that's a half gram cartridge." That's right, $65 for a half gram cartridge plus two joints at $10 a piece comes to $85. Then there's the Colorado excise tax that was $2.47, Fort Collins City tax of $3.27, Larimer County tax at 55 cents, state retail marijuana sales tax at $8.50, and the whole purchase ends up costing $99.79 for something I can get in a Portland dispensary for $45.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
NARML stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 429, and we are speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. He's on Skype with us this time from Albany, New York, and I'm out here in Denver. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Wishing I was in Colorado.
Oh, I know. You got to bring some money, though. It's a little pricey in these shops.
I'm afraid I know what you mean.
I guess I got West Coast problems because I'm sure the price on the streets out there in the East Coast is probably as high or worse.
Let's just say a $300 ounce is a real find around here.
Oh, no kidding. Well, folks, this is our cannabis Q&A, so if you've got any questions, make sure you get into our chat room. We'll take your questions and get them right before one of America's leading researchers here. We also like to start things off by giving Dr. Mitch the first word in what's the latest in cannabis science.
Wonderful new data on cannabis helping diabetic neuropathy. Some intriguing media coverage about cannabis helping dogs. A nice critique of the marijuana is addictive literature, as well as some nice ideas about new research on childhood brain cancer.
Yeah, let's start with the childhood brain cancer. That's something that came out of Colorado here. So I'm in Denver. It seems appropriate. What's going on in this new research?
Looks like some nice use of funding where researchers are going to get 50 kids into a randomized clinical trial and follow them up for at least one, if not 3 years. I'm extremely optimistic about this. It looks like they're going to make good use of the data. They've got a really nice team, and I'm completely optimistic that this is going to work out well. And the fact that it's at Children's Hospital Colorado really reassures me that this is the kind of thing where we're going to have good detailed data with a lot of dependent variables and really get to give cannabis treatments the benefit of the doubt.
And this isn't just treatment of symptoms related to their treatment for cancer, but actually treating and killing the cancer with cannabis?
Fortunately, they're going to go ahead and take a look at the correlates of some of the other treatments as well, but the opportunity for cannabis to work in conjunction, at least with radiation and some other therapies, is also going to be there. So I do feel like this is going to put a great dent in some of the criticisms about how cannabis can interact with other treatments.
Now, it's so heartening, you know, with the, you know, last year the big story was CBD oil for epileptic kids, and now this, in that, you know, we've been beaten about the neck and shoulders with what about the children for so long in the marijuana debates, that it's actually turning out in our favor.
I couldn't be happier. This is splendid that this research is happening.
All right, let's look at this vaporized cannabis and diabetic neuropathy. First of all, what is that? And second of all, how is vaporized cannabis helping?
What's intriguing is this is a source of pain where diabetics basically have damage to the nerves related to blood flow, actually to the nerves themselves. It's really complicated and incredibly painful, and the kind of thing that you don't often think about as a side effect of diabetes. We've seen cannabis at moderate doses do well with other kinds of pain, and it makes perfect sense that this ought to work. AIDS-related neuropathy has responded well to vaporized cannabis, and I'm really delighted to see that this is also generalizing to neuropathy related to diabetes.
Yeah, good news. That's diabetes runs in my family. I lost my grandmother to it. My dad's got it, so I got to lay off the gummy bears, Doc.
I should caution that the diet is definitely a big contributor, so anything you can do to go to that plant-based, low-sugar diet is probably worth your while.
Okay. All right, let's get to a question from our chat room. John Thomas asks, what about the new study in the journal Hippocampus, where researchers at Northwestern University found problems regarding the heavy use of marijuana as an adolescent on those users' long-term memory?
What's intriguing here is we've got a study that I am, you know, definitely behind cautious use, especially for adolescents. I don't want to see folks starting early if they're not medical users, and I really am behind that kind of caution. Nevertheless, when you look at a study like this, they take an awful lot of tests. They do an awful lot of memory tasks, and then a subset of them tend to show modest deficits. So I don't want to make too much of this, but I do want to caution folks, the plant is not for kids and the plant is not a toy. You can't encode new information during intoxication, at least not easily. And long term, you really want to make sure you're getting time off and don't start too early in life.
There we go. That's good advice for everyone out there listening. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine here in Cannabis Q&A. If you got a question, get it into our chat room. And if you want to keep it private, you can always email it to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. All right, this story on the sick and elderly dogs, medical marijuana for dogs. What's up with this?
What's funny about this is when you go back to O'Shaughnessy's work back in the 1800s, he actually gave cannabis to dogs and showed that indeed they do have some of the same reactions that humans have, particularly in response to pain. And there's some really heartfelt stories here of pet owners providing edibles basically to their dogs and seeing a lot of positive effects. I want to be cautious about it because I'm not a veterinarian, but the CB1 receptor is the CB1 receptor. Now, some of the products out there are made from industrial hemp, and I honestly can't imagine they would be necessarily very helpful, but others really do have both THC and cannabidiol and might really help an aging dog. The industrial moves around this are very tricky, and the laws are completely insane. So I you know, I can't imagine that this is going to be an easy thing to get access to necessarily, especially for folks outside of states that have legal markets. But I think this is really going to be the wave of the future, and we're going to see a lot of veterinarians prescribing this sooner or later.
So this isn't necessarily relegated to just mammals, is it, this endocannabinoid system?
It's funny because actually there are, you know, literally unicellular organisms that have CB1 receptors, and you can see them when THC is in the thing starting to move around and try to find food more. I mean, it's stunning how this moves down the phylogenetic spectrum.
So when my college roommate was getting the iguana stoned, that was actually working?
Odds are high that the iguana was really stoned. I don't know how much behavioral change you might have seen, but the iguana might have enjoyed his food a little more.
There we go. All right, let's get to this. You know, USA Today is starting to weigh in on the cannabis issues and legalization, and they pose the big question that's been going around since the 70s. Will big tobacco become big marijuana? What's the takeaway from this?
Well, this article suggests that the tobacco companies are saying they're really not interested and they have no plans of entering the market. I don't believe this for a second, Russ, and I hate to sound like the paranoid cannabis activist. I was part of a big, well, basically when there were tobacco suits in California, I was part of a team that went through all their papers, and we did find things where it looked like they were experimenting with branding. There was a sort of Marlboro-looking thing that had marijuana on it. I got a feeling that, you know, they really are positioned well. They have the rolling machines. They have all the stuff to enter big, but they're not going to go until they get a federal market open, and then we better watch out. So I feel like this may be a little bit ingenuous to say that they really don't have any plans.
Mm, you know, I can't imagine that tobacco executives might, you know, just lie to our faces like that, Dr. Mitch.
It's hard to believe, but after watching them all say nicotine is not addictive, I'm a little apprehensive when they say we have no plans to enter the marijuana market.
Well, you know, I think one aspect of this is it's going to be the Budweiser, the Marlboro, the big, you know, cheap, easy to get kind of stuff, but I don't know anybody who's going to necessarily be smoking that. So it'll be interesting to see how that might develop with those guys. I think the good news is that, in an odd way to call this good news, is that we still have federal Schedule One, and they're not going to touch it if it's federal Schedule One. Maybe rolling this legalization out state by state for a while isn't such a bad thing.
I think there are adaptive things, and I also like the idea of people getting some local brand loyalty so that if national brands do open up, they really just wouldn't be interested.
Mm. Boy, we'll have to keep an eye on this as it develops. And of course, once California goes in 2016, I think that's when the ball really starts rolling on that. All right, let's get to another question that we've got here, another story we had here. The Stranger doing a good piece on whether or not marijuana is addictive.
This was delightful, and it quotes my friend Roger Rothman, who's in the Seattle area, and points out that this 9% of users become addicted number has become reified as if it's some kind of outrageous, unarguable fact, when in fact, when you take a closer look, among folks who start later in life, it's probably more like 2 to 3% actually develop dependence symptoms. And the definition of dependence is turning into this really outrageous moving target. So the DSM-5 has come out with what they're calling substance-related disorder. And suddenly, instead of three symptoms, you only need two symptoms, and they don't have to be tolerance and withdrawal. They might be something else. And craving is one of those symptoms, which in my lab we're really making fun of, because you can probably crave cannabis even if you've only used it once. So I want people to, you know, take cannabis's addictive potential in mind when they're thinking about daily use, but also interpret these data with quite the grain of salt. And I want to emphasize that whatever marijuana dependence is, if it exists at all, it's nothing like, say, dependence on the opiates or even alcohol dependence.
Yeah, moving the goalposts. It reminds me of Reagan declaring ketchup a vegetable so that they could meet a certain definition. Well, Dr. Mitch, I know I just went across Idaho and Wyoming over a two-day span and had no cannabis in that two-day span. My lower back hurt a little more than it usually does. I was a little grumpier. It was a little harder to get to sleep. And then we made it to Fort Collins. So everything's fine now.
And what a surprise. Your back feels fine and you're sleeping great.
I feel great. I don't know how that worked, because I was buying this weed on the recreational side. So I don't know how it had medical effects. They must have made a mistake somewhere. Folks, join us every Monday with Dr. Mitch Earlywine here on the Cannabis Q&A segment. You can also get these replays, this show replays 3 hours from now, no matter where you're listening to it. So if you missed the first part of this, you can get that as well. You can reach Dr. Mitch by email at 420research@gmail.com, 420research@gmail.com. Any plans for 420, Dr. Mitch?
As it turns out, I'm giving talks the whole last half of the month, almost everywhere I go. So I'm not going to be able to make a big deal out of it, but I am spreading the word, and I'm really happy about that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Nice talking to you from Denver, Colorado, everybody. We'll talk to Dr. Mitch next week. See you then.
Enjoy.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. We've got a great interview coming up with Kayvon Collett-Barry from Denver. He's with Denver Relief, and he's running for the Denver City Council. We talked to him just a couple hours ago. It's coming up to you damn near live next.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Jive, Mary, Grifo, Grass, Hay. Technically, it's Cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different. Something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Reforming America's marijuana prohibition laws takes education, lobbying, and voting.
From Washington, D.C. to your state capitol to your city hall, marijuana law reform involves all levels of civic life. Learn how you can make your impact with elected officials as we take a look at our government at work.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Radical Russ here in Denver, Colorado. We are with Calico Castile. Wiz Calico's with us here in the offices of Denver Relief with Kayvon Kalabari. Kayvon, thanks for having us in here.
Thanks for having me.
Calico, thanks for being here, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so stoked to be here in Denver, in the land of legal weed.
I know. We're just a few days out from the Cannabis Cup, but you've got something that's far more important going on. You're running for city council.
I am, for one of the two available at-large seats. So Denver has 13 districts, 13 city council seats, 11 districts, two at-large. I'm running against two incumbents. Both of them have been very unfavorable to cannabis over the last 4 years. And, the elections are May 5th, and ballots get mailed out today, April 13th, so time is ticking.
So some of these incumbents are going to have to maybe pay the price for not being on the right side of history, perhaps.
That's the thought. We have three or four now cannabis-friendly candidates, openly cannabis-friendly candidates out there, which hasn't really happened before in Denver municipal politics, and they're getting a lot of favor and getting a lot of attention because of that. They're definitely entertaining a different demographic that hasn't been talked to in these municipal elections. We had 30,000 people, registered voters, move here in Denver in the last 12 months alone, and that's how many votes it took to win second place last time. Why did those people move here? I think we could probably assume cannabis had something to do with that. So there's definitely a different demographic here and a lot of opportunity to shake things up.
Would this be the first election where we could see a demographic bump in voting because of cannabis, or has it been seen before?
You know, I think we've seen the cannabis vote come out for like Amendment 64 here, which passed on the statewide level, and for local initiatives that we've had here in Denver. But what makes this one really unique is that it's an all mail-in ballot. So we're going to engage a lot more young folks and a lot more cannabis consumers, I think, because of that, people that didn't feel like going and waiting in line on Election Day.
Well, you know, and obviously when Obama came to town and was campaigning in 2012, marijuana legalization got, you know, far more votes than that. And I mean, obviously talking about the people who have moved to Colorado and made that an issue. And I know you have other issues, obviously, in your platform other than cannabis, but sticking to just cannabis specifically, I know you had mentioned something about, like, places in Denver have to close by 7 p.m. Are there certain things that you're looking at specifically that, you know, that kind of shows a way in which the cannabis industry is being treated different than other industries?
Yeah, certainly. And I should note that I certainly don't want to be known only as a cannabis candidate, because I think that's really failed a lot of folks that have tried to run in the past. They get pegged as that, and unfortunately that stigma still exists and persists, and it's been very negative to their campaigns in the past. But yeah, I am fighting for the rights of the cannabis businesses and for caregivers here in Denver, because we have a city council that's been very degrading to the industry over the last 4 years. Something you mentioned, the marketing. You know, we can't market like alcohol does. Amendment 64 on the state level was supposed to equalize us and put us on a level playing field. So the fact that we can't have any public advertising is extremely unfortunate and unfair. But even more so than that, that's detrimental to the industry, is the fact that here in Denver we have to close at 7 p.m. on the retail side, whereas every municipality around Denver is allowing dispensaries to stay open until 10 p.m. or midnight. We have 150 to 200 dispensaries in Denver. We have 5 to 10 people working in them at any given time. That's 3 to 5 hours a day. We're talking thousands of labor hours every single day that we're losing, and probably millions of dollars of tax revenue for no real reason, when alcohol, these liquor stores are staying open until midnight, and that's a drug that kills 1 in 7 working age Coloradans, so extremely unfair. We've got some caregiver issues. The city council just passed a couple weeks ago that pretty much it's digressing back into prohibition, in a sense, and recreating the definition of what a cannabis plant is, and it's really setting a lot of people up for potential failure and legal issues on the private caregiver side. And then we've got the public consumption issue. We've got millions of people coming here every month to purchase cannabis legally, but they don't have a place to consume it. We've got corporate hotels that make up the most of what we have here for lodging. They're never going to allow cannabis. We've got a lot of boutique hotels that have opened up, but because of the Colorado Clean Indoor Air Act, 75% of those have to be non-smoking, so that doesn't really solve the problem. We've had public consumption tickets and citations rise 500 or 600% in the last 12 months alone. So we need to provide a place for people to legally consume, because we're letting them purchase it. So my thought is not necessarily to go towards cannabis cafes right off the bat, because I think, one, that keeps the cannabis industry segregated, doesn't allow us to just kind of immerse ourselves inside mainstream society. I think that the solution, at least to start, and I think cannabis cafes are great in the long term, don't get me wrong, but I think the baby step in the way to get people to agree with it, to have an easier discussion about it, is to implement it within our existing venues and bars and restaurants. So allowing a place that has a liquor license to take a designated interior space and designate it for vaporization, and to have an exterior space that's, you know, fenced in and within that liquor liquor license's boundary, where cigarettes can be smoked outside to allow for the combustion of plant material for cannabis. And I think that would allow us to, again, be visible and integrate in with people that don't consume cannabis, to prove that there's nothing different about us. We just choose to intoxicate with a different substance.
You know, you're speaking of the recreational side in Colorado, and then there's the medical side in Colorado. Are there any issues in that respect, in reconciliation or trying to equalize the I don't know, prices, hours, anything between the two that you're looking to address?
Yeah, you know, they haven't really put in any caps on production on recreationally like they have in some of the other states, Washington, for instance. So we're actually seeing people kind of run amok with regard to production. We're already seeing prices on the recreational side drop to around where they are on the medical side. But we have people building in Pueblo, for instance, facilities that are 5, 6, 10 times larger than what they're growing out of now. Mm-hmm. So if we're already hitting those prices on the medical side with this 21.12% sales tax and 15% excise tax, but people have, and we're meeting that demand, why are we building facilities that are that large? Where's all this product going to go? And I think that's really a product of people who don't understand cannabis coming in here and having too much of a commercial interest in it, just saying that, hey, if we grow it, it's going to get sold. But that's not the case. And I really see some big names in Colorado falling this year because they're going to focus too much on the B and C grade product, the Coors, the Miller, the Bud, and not focus on what I think Colorado is moving towards, which is more like the craft brew industry. A place like Denver, Leaf, or Lee Eagle, or some of these other places out here are focusing on producing all of their products in-house and producing it in more small batch environments so that you can charge a higher price and engage more with the connoisseur, which I think this market is really quickly developing. You know, as more people try more strains of cannabis for more shops, they're starting to understand the contrast between what is good and what is bad, and it's really starting to separate itself. But as far as medical, there's a lot of people that are trying to kill medical right now. They're trying to make it sunset, and a lot of that has to do with the lobbying power on the recreational side, which is really unfortunate because a lot of these recreational stores have really disregarded the medical patients since they opened. We've seen far fewer products related to CBD or non-smokable products being offered. We saw a lot of recreational stores come from medical and have people drop that medical license. So patients are really kind of getting disregarded. And then back to that caregiver issue I was talking about earlier, they're getting attacked in this regulated side and in this kind of unregulated caregiver market. So I hope that other states that are trying to marry the two and have two right in parallel together, recreational and medically, can learn from the issues that we're dealing with here in Colorado right now.
What do you think could be done to incentivize, if there was one system, or if it continues the way it's going, to incentivize these shops to carry those things that the medical people need? Tax breaks or any sort of incentive plans?
Well, I think that we're going to start to see really competition just dictate that product development. It's going back to talking about prices getting so low, people are going to have to start to find ways to differentiate themselves. So I think one that's going to be done through packaging and branding, which is something this industry hasn't really focused on too well. So that's moving in that direction. But I think in that new product development, we're just going to have to see it because people are going to have to do so to survive. And I don't know, you know, what other states are like. I think it's going to take a little while to get there. But Colorado, because we've had this regulated market for so long, we do have people looking to stop smoking or stop vaporizing and stop taking dabs, and they understand that even though it is healthier than drinking, even though it is healthier than smoking tobacco, it's still not necessarily great for you in some respects, especially if you're dealing with a medical condition. And people are moving towards trying to, you know, patches, for instance. I think just by having those on the market and people seeing their efficacy and the fact that you can get more out of a little because they are much more efficient with entering the bloodstream, they can be integrated more into your life without people seeing you consume. It's more discreet. I think we're going to see the industry move into more of these lifestyle products, more so than the combustion and the traditional ways of consuming. I'll never leave it. I mean, I love smoking a joint. That's my preferred way. I'm never going to stop. But as we integrate more into mainstream, I think we're going to have to make those products more available if we're going to engage the mainstream and new customers.
like when we were talking about the other issues that obviously that you're focusing on in this campaign other than cannabis that's really setting you apart, what are a few of those that, you know, that you're focusing on in this election?
Yeah, you know, one of the main ones is affordable housing. We've had 100,000 people move to the Denver metro area in the last 12 months, 30,000 registered voters. We have 27,000 households being pushed out of Denver County because they can't afford to live where they have been for so long now. Our city council has set aside $3 million for new public housing, affordable housing opportunities, but has spent over $7.5 million in the last year on police brutality settlements. We're proposing spending $750 million on a I-70 interstate expansion that is unnecessary. It needs to be fixed, not widened. They're trying to widen it all with city money. Again, $750 million as opposed to the $3 million they're spending on affordable housing. We've criminalized homelessness here recently, which is extremely unfortunate because, again, we're taking people's homes, we're pushing them into the streets, and then we're criminalizing that. We have the police brutality issue that I mentioned that's getting worse, and children's services. You know, we have failing public schools here, as most places do in America, and we're not engaging kids. We're actually testing more on a daily basis in Denver than almost anywhere else in the world. Testing doesn't teach kids, right? I mean, teaching teaches kids. Kids need to learn. They need to be engaged to learn, not take tests. So it's my goal with my, I sit on the board of directors for the Colorado Youth Symphony Orchestra. I've been a Denver kids mentor, big brother with three kids for now 8 years. And I've seen what little engagement post-school can do for folks. So I think if I can engage existing nonprofits, entities, programs that are after school, to get them to provide a certain level of attendance or participation from Denver Public School students, that we can really show kids through entrepreneurship, artistic, creative programs that there is an alternative to what they're being taught in school. That's something that benefited me a great deal. I've been living on my own since I was 16. I started homeless in my entrepreneurial career 7 years ago. Bootstrapped everything and got to where I am today because I saw that there were these opportunities out there and was engaged by these creative, unique people. And that's ultimately what I want to show other people.
Great. What is a way that people can kind of get in touch with your campaign? And if they want to donate, obviously you're heading into the last few weeks of the campaign here and every little bit is going to be crucial, any volunteer work or any kind of campaign contributions. Where can people go to find more out about your campaign?
You bet. Yeah. Kayvon for Denver, K-A-Y-V-A-N, for Denver. KayvonForDenver.com is my campaign website. You can donate on there. I do need, obviously, all the money I can get. I just started this campaign in February, but I've already made a lot of noise. I'm considered the only competitor to the two incumbents. But these two incumbents have been raising money now for 4+ years, and I'm dealing with about a third of the budget that each one of them are. But I'm engaging people in a very creative way through sex spot comedy, putting shows in front of 40,000 people every year, through social media advertising, which they're not focusing on at all. My only campaign fundraiser this entire period was a roast of myself by 10 of Denver's best comics, and I'm being aggressive, and I'm calling people out, and I'm getting great earned media exposure. So I'm doing a lot with the little bit of money that I have, but certainly everything I get here the last 3 weeks will benefit me a great deal.
I definitely think just from the outside that you can tell that this is a campaign run by a grassroots movement, and I definitely think that, you know, you speak to a lot of issues that people don't hear talked about enough in everyday politics. So it's refreshing to see a candidate like yourself coming in and mentioning these issues. So.
I mean, I grew up from Safer, you know. I mean, I've been been in the cannabis advocacy here in Colorado for 10 years, and it came from working with Mason and having to do interesting things to get people's attention about topics that didn't have the attention they deserved. And I've really taken a page out of his book in that regard. So I hope it works as well as that did.
What are some of your social media contacts that people want to touch?
Yeah, at Kayvon for Denver on Twitter. I think it's Kayvon for City Council on Facebook, but if you Google Kayvon City Council, I bet I'm the only person by that name running. And then I've also got some great videos that are both funny and a little bit demeaning to the other candidates that I would encourage folks to check out. Those can be found on my Facebook page and on Twitter as well.
Excellent. We'll get them shared. Kayvon, thanks for joining us on the show. And
all right, We're back here in Denver, back online. Great interview with Kayvon Kalatbari for City Council. We've got his sign in the back of the rental car. It's stickers on the side of the window. Good luck, Kayvon. Stay tuned for Hour 2. Wiz Khalifa and I coming back here talking about lots of stuff, including Normal's Keith Straub has an article up on marijuana.com calling out the Wakenbakers. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Also, we'll talk about Rocky Mountain High prices, all that and more. Coming up live from Denver, for Wiz Khalifa, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you